welcome to the Lancaster Happy Hour, where we connect people with our amazing community over our favorite beverages. Sponsored by the Chuck Hannebach team at Realty One Group Unlimited, we're excited that you're joining us today and can't wait to shake things up.
Hey everybody, we are back with the Lancaster Happy Hour, and today our guest is Kyle Brooks from Spooky Nook. So those of you who are local residents here probably know Spooky Nook, but those of you outside of our area may not. So we'd like to ask Kyle a couple questions, but we're going to start off. Kyle, give us a little bit of background about who Kyle is.
Well, I am 40 years old. I live in Ephrata, Pennsylvania. Moved there about 15 years ago. Went to school in Grantham, PA at Messiah College, now Messiah University. Studied sport management there. From there, I started working for Lanco Fieldhouse, which is now ironically Spooky Nook Lanco. Yeah, Spooky Nook Sports purchased Lanco Fieldhouse back in 2018. So that's kind of our second property here in Pennsylvania. And I started at Spooky Nook Sports back in 2013, about 2 months before the doors opened. So it's been pretty neat to be able to see the facility, to get it off the ground, to get it going. I started out as a youth programming coordinator, a baseball instructor. And from there, I just kind of learned the business as we went. Sam Byler, the owner of Spooky Nook Sports, has been a great leader, a great mentor for me. I've been able to learn a lot through him when it comes to managing a business, managing people, understanding budgets, understanding economic impact, with having a hotel and a restaurant and arcade and clip and climb and sports events and banquets and trade shows. It's been a lot to learn in over 10 years. I've been able to grow with it.
You're juggling a lot of balls at the same time.
Yes. Through all that, have been able to work through various positions and been able to do something I love. I love sports. Played baseball and basketball in high school and college, and I'm really thankful that I'm able to work in the field.
Before we jump into the Spooky Nook stuff, at Messiah, you played baseball there.
Yes.
And I want to jump in here quick because Ryan, who is on our team, this is actually your brother.
Yes.
So when I say that, no resemblance here at all.
Not really, actually. Do you hold any records at Messiah at all for baseball?
No individual records, but I had a decent career there. We did win two MAC championships while we were there. Went on to the NCAA regionals, part of the D3 World Series. So that was really fun. I did get to pitch in the championship game in Messiah's first ever championship. Finished one win shy of the school record, and so it was really fun. The thing that I take away from college was the relationships that I built with the guys on the baseball team was really fun.
So in college, were you set out as a business major then, or were you into the sports? Because I don't know enough about the curriculums at Messiah University, or back then it'd be Messiah College, where Messiah University is. Is that where you were heading, was into the sports world? Were you heading just into the business world? Like what did that education look like?
Sure. So I actually went, my freshman year, I was a math major. And I only chose that because that's what I was good at. So I thought maybe a math teacher, our dad is a teacher. I thought that maybe that would be something I would get into. And once they started making me add together letters, I really was kind of getting out of the whole math scene. So I ended up switching my major to sport management. It was some guys on the baseball team who actually talked to me about what the opportunities were there. And I really liked it. So I jumped into sport management. It was actually sport and exercise science with a concentration in sport management. And that was the goal was, once I had switched to that, was to get involved in sports and to work in sports. And the career path that I ended up on, I wasn't necessarily intending to work for an indoor facility and eventually what is now the largest indoor facility in North America. It happened to fall in the backyard, and I was blessed to have an opportunity with that. So
wow, interesting.
I asked about the records because this whole time, and here's the thing, I don't know if we just made this up, and it's been a running joke in our family, but I thought you did hold the career walks record there
for throwing them. Oh, you do. I do hold the career walks. I didn't necessarily.
As a pitcher, so walks. So he's you're not a baseball guy, no. But. Walks are bad as a pitcher. And yes. So I was, cause he struck out a lot of people. He was a very good pitcher. So okay. I don't want to like talk too much about how great he was, but so we always joke about how like loves. My biggest thing is like, but you hold the record for career walks there at Messiah, like, you know, congratulations, wow. Yes. But yeah. He was very successful so, there. He, you know, I don't like to talk about that stuff, but.
Interesting.
Ryan likes to rag on me whenever he can, but
yeah,
you know, I try to give it back.
That's brothers. That's
exactly right.
Kyle is the most competitive person I know, which just like our dad, like, you know, completely competitive in every single thing. As kids, even if I could beat him in something, I was afraid to beat him in anything. Like it was immediate, like, you know, I would quiver in the corner if I was about to or anything, like even in like a video game, anything. He was extremely competitive.
Absolutely.
So that's why I rag on him now, because he let me have it all the time growing up.
Are you still as competitive now as older, I'm assuming you have children, you know, are you still equally as competitive?
Yes.
Or has that slowed down a little bit?
That has not slowed down. I'm competitive, and I've tried to get away from that, but it's just who I am. I'm competitive. You want to play a sport, I'm in, let's go. I'm going to beat you at it. That's the mentality that I take. And,
so, you know, having kids, and I believe I understand from Ryan, you coach.
Yes.
Yep. How does that competitiveness get into the way of that?
Sure. And you know, it's something that I haven't had to experience too much to this point. I have an 11-year-old son, Cole. I have a 7-year-old, Caden, and a 5-year-old, Carson. They all play baseball. Caden just started playing basketball this year. So I've coached baseball since Cole was 5. So it's 6-7 years now that I've been coaching baseball. But at the T-ball and coach pitch levels, it's more about them just having fun playing the game.
Right.
There's not really a whole lot of competitiveness to it. Ryan's experienced the T-ball scene a little bit with Wesley. So, you know, that has been something I haven't had to face a whole lot yet. This year I'm coaching my 2 older boys on a 10U baseball team. They're playing kid pitch. It's still, you're talking rec league level, and I still feel the competitive juices flowing a little bit. You know, there's special rules that you play by, and you know, you can't do certain things, but I still like to win. So,
see, that's as challenging a job as Kyle has at work. His wife has an even harder job probably at home maintaining those 3 boys, because I know them and it is a lot of work. But that's why, like, Kyle coaching them and running around like crazy, like spooking up is a crazy job, you know, running back and forth and all that. So going home and then coaching the kids, you know, it's a full time. He's going full time right over there.
It is.
How does the competitiveness then transfer into being your position with spooking up? You know, competitiveness in a business aspect, how has that been?
Sure. You know, sometimes I even find myself trying to look for a reason to be competitive, because it brings out more in me. You know, there's situations on the baseball field where things got tight and the game was close, and you know, that's when I felt like I excelled. When it comes to business, I want to be the best. I want us to have the best facility. I want people leaving the facility saying, that place is awesome. You know, that's the cleanest place I've ever been. That's the best courts I've ever played on. That's the best food I've ever eaten. And you know, that competitive drive, you know, just makes you want to be better. It makes the team around me want to be better, I think. You know, it's, we have a lot of people who played sports in their past. So, you know, from that standpoint, we have a lot of competitive people on our team. You know, when you talk about a for-profit business, you know, that's different than a lot of sports models locally. When you talk about YMCAs or rec centers, they're nonprofit. You know, for us, we are for-profit. So, you know, trying to drive revenues is a big piece of our business and trying to find new opportunities. You know, a facility of our size, it's never been accomplished before. These facilities have come and gone, but none have lasted very long. You know, Spooky Nook right now is kind of paving the way. And I think that the competitive challenge for me is we're going to be the first ones to be successful with this model.
So you're talking about Spooky Nook and you're talking about the fact that you're kind of leading the pack, you know, spearheading a lot of things. Let's talk about the facility itself. Let's transition. Because a lot of people who are listening in or watching this may not even understand the magnitude of what Spooky Nook is. Can you kind of go into that a little broader, like how many acres it covers, like how many square foot that building is, and kind of maybe
all the courts and everything.
Courts, you know, what the sports that you carry, what does the staffing level have to be to maintain a facility at the level that you're saying that you want it to be? Like, I want it to be the best. I want it to be the cleanest. I want it to be this. Can you kind of dive into that a little bit?
Sure. Yeah. So Spooky Nook is the building itself is 750,000 square feet. So it is a massive property.
It's like, do you sometimes like forget how big it is because you're there all the time?
Yeah, like, definitely. You know,
I go to the gym over there and I'm like, I only see like a small, the gym's huge and I only see a small part of it. And I'm like, there's a whole nother, like there's a hotel and all that stuff too. Like
there's
times.
Do you put a pedometer on it? Oh yeah.
Our facility operations teams, they are the ones who do most of our setup and tear down for our facility. And these guys are getting, you know, 10, 12, 15 miles a day walking around our facility, you know, just in the 8 hours that they're there at work. You know, we talk about like you walk out to your car and you forgot your keys back in the office. Well, that's a 15 minute mistake because you gotta walk all the way back to the building and back to your car. But yeah, it's a 750,000 square feet. You know, you got another 150 or 200,000 square feet with the inflatable dome that we have. It's a full size football field inside. Then there's also another full size outdoor field. But the building itself, we can accommodate up to 34 basketball courts. You know, so you can have up to 68 teams playing at the same time. Typically, these tournaments that run from a basketball standpoint are anywhere between 300 and 500 teams in a weekend. And you know, so it's a lot of games to try to get in. Volleyball will accommodate up to, you know, we could probably do about 60 volleyball courts in there.
Probably 60?
60, yeah.
I didn't realize that facility could house that many courts or fields. That's amazing to me.
Yeah, it's a lot. Some of them are hardwood courts. Some of them are sport courts. We also have some turf fields. We have a baseball diamond in there. It's not a full-size baseball field. It's got a full-size infield with a little bit of outfield, 14 batting cage lanes. As Ryan mentioned, we have a fitness center. It's massive. It's got some unique features to it that you won't really find in too many other places. We have a sports performance training center, which is typically our higher end athletes will train at those places or in that area of the building. We have an arcade, a clip and climb. Those things are kind of the entertainment pieces for families in between games. They're waiting to play and, you know, something for them to do while they're waiting. We also have a 135 room hotel in there, along with a full service restaurant. Also, there's conference center space for business meetings. A lot of our area is we have the opportunity to do trade shows.
Mm-hmm. We're the beer fest. We were there for the beer fest earlier this year.
Yes. So you guys
were later last year.
I think you guys were in the hotel atrium. The beer fest itself was in Olympic Hall.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, so Olympic Hall, we do a lot of things in there, from wedding receptions to large dinners. We've had 1,500 person dinners in there, and we'll provide all that food service ourselves. When you talk about, you know, all those different areas that we have on our property, we have over 800 employees that work for the Nook. Now, I'd say about 100 of them are full-time employees, but you know, there's a lot of part-time help needed, especially on our weekends when we're at our busiest, from out in the parking lots to cleaning up, to cooking food, to, you know, redoing hotel rooms. You know, there's a lot of stuff to take care of. So yeah, a lot of people do that. And you know, we're essentially trying to copy that now out in Ohio, Hamilton, Ohio. We have that second property going.
Is that started now?
That has started. That is open out there. It's actually the sports complex piece of it is separate from the convention center. Mm. And the hotel out there is almost double the size of the one in Pennsylvania.
Now, if I could interrupt one thing, is that repurposing a building? Like, I mean, when you guys did Spooky Nook, you repurposed the old Armstrong plant.
Correct. Yep.
Is this repurposing a building in Ohio as well?
Yes, it was.
That's cool.
So they had an old paper mill that was kind of the center of the town. Everybody had a relative or somebody they knew that worked for the paper mill. Cool. And the paper mill actually ended up burning down.
Okay.
Sam ended up buying the property. He ended up redoing the convention center. That building was kept intact. The actual paper mill itself was mostly torn down. They kept one of the main walls along B Street to be able to kind of keep the face of the former paper mill. But then the sports complex was able to be designed for what we needed out there. Whereas here in Pennsylvania, the Armstrong building, we had to build with inside the walls.
Right.
Anything second level is something that was added in there by Sam. One of the struggles that we deal with in Pennsylvania is every 75 feet, there's a support pole that goes up to the ceiling. Where out in Ohio, they were able to work around that, you know, to be able to design that exactly the way they need it. So it's been neat to, try to replicate what we've been able to do over 10 years in Pennsylvania. And start to do that out in Ohio. And it is open and it's gaining traction. It's about finding organizers who can come in and run some larger events for us. And the town has been fantastic out there, Hamilton, in welcoming us and helping us get started out there. So it's been good.
Now, what sports are bringing in the most people on the weekends? Now, you all talk about all those courts and everything, all the volleyball and basketball. What sport is bringing in the most people? Like, and follow up question is like, on most weekends, how many people are you bringing in for an entire weekend? Like,
yep. So basketball is the main one. Like I said, you can have between 300 and 500 basketball teams in on a single day.
it's crazy. It really is.
It's chaotic. I mean, you're talking 10 to 15. We've had as many as 20,000 people through the doors in one day.
Wow.
You're talking about the Philadelphia 76ers stadium sellout. That's how many people are coming through the door in one day. So it's a lot of people, to take care of that you want to create a good experience for. And
what's the footprint, like the furthest team to come to you? Like what is that reach for teams to come into this facility?
Geographically. Sure. The youth sports events. I mean, we've had teams from over in Europe,
really,
Canada, they come from all over. We just had an archery event last month that had archers from all over the world here.
That's so cool.
It was 80 different countries were represented that came to this event. It's got, the reach across the globe. Generally speaking, 95% of the people who come are from the United States. Mm-hmm. And I would say probably even around 60%, 70% are mid-Atlantic, more regional focused. But they do come from across the country, especially when we run our live events. Live events are when NCAA Division I basketball coaches can come and recruit players. So you typically have the cream of the crop, high-level college basketball coaches coming and recruiting. That's going to draw teams from everywhere.
Do you find a lot of our local our local districts, local teams utilizing the facility, or is it more outside? Does it mix? I don't even know how to ask that question really sure. Effectively, but a lot of times when you're inside your own community, you don't use what's there. And it's usually the outside people that use, so do you find that we as Lancaster Countyans or Lancastrians and that are using it?
Yeah.
I'm stumbling over my question.
I like the Lancastrians. Yeah.
Absolutely. Both. So typically on the weekends, we're going to see some local traffic, but most of it's going to be regional or national teams, families coming in. But during the week, it's almost entirely local. Traffic. When you talk about our fitness base, that's almost completely local traffic. You're talking about people generally speaking within 30 minutes of the Nook. We also have leagues and camps and clinics, private lessons, smaller tournaments during the week. The banquets and other companies that come in and use it for meeting space. You know, the trade shows that come in, for the most part, that is Lancaster County, surrounding counties. And, you know, they really help us out during the week to fill that business.
As your local real estate experts, we are excited to meet with you over our favorite beverages, bringing you the latest and most exciting information in Lancaster County. Our real estate careers have enabled us to know the ins and outs of our community. Our job is to not only assist buyers and sellers with their real estate needs, but to bring the community together in a unique and meaningful way. So grab your drink of choice and settle in as we talk all things Central PA. Follow us on social media or find us at www.chuckhonnebachteam.com.
So what would you say is the most challenging part of your job?
I mean,
is it the parents?
You know, me personally,
let's be real.
Me personally, the challenge of officials officiating, like when you get into competition, people are going to get heated. People are going to get elevated. Yeah. So you do deal with at times, whether it's a parent who's yelling at an official or a coach who is going off on an official, players that might be getting into it on the court.
Because these are travel teams. These are people that pay a lot of money for this too. So not advocating that it's okay for them to scream and yell, but they invest a lot into these things.
Absolutely. So it's like, yeah. And they, you know, people are looking for a career in the sport, you know, that's often, or maybe it's a scholarship that they're looking for, mm-hmm. you know, to go to college. And so it's high competition, you know, it's something that I love competition, right?
I'm going to jump here. My question was going to be like, who are the famous people who have come to utilize the facility? I know that you were very fortunate to have the US hockey team.
Yes.
For years, the Olympic hockey team for years. I don't know if they're still utilizing the facility in any fashion or not. I know there was a lot of controversy on that years ago.
Sure.
But now, do you find professional athletes in, you know, like maybe an Eagles player or, you know, a Phillies baseball player utilizing the facility?
Like a World Series champion there.
Yeah. Do you see like famous athletes that utilizing it?
Yes. Yeah. So Travis Jankowski, he's mm-hmm. a local baseball product from Lancaster Catholic, I believe. He works out at the facility. He gets himself ready for the season. He just won a World Series with the Texas Rangers. And so he'll be back with them.
He was on the Phillies for a while.
Okay. He was on the Phillies.
I guess yep. Good for him that he won a World Series somewhere else, but it'd have been nicer. Yeah.
It would have been nice if he had helped with the Phillies. Yeah.
So I'm not too proud of him, but
yeah. He even got a couple starts in the World Series.
Yeah, this is awesome. So
it was very cool. Really neat experience for him. So, but he does his training in the off season, in our sports performance center. Outside of that, basketball coaches, Division I, high level, you know, Gino Auriemma with UConn women's basketball has been at the facility. He comes almost every summer to recruit. John Calipari,
Kentucky.
The list goes on with the college basketball coaches that have come in. And then
because you're getting like the number, you're getting like high end basketball recruits that are coming in there.
Absolutely.
Like through some of those tournaments. Like these are like the top high school basketball players in America, like come through.
Two summers ago, Jalen Duren, he's now a forward for the Detroit Pistons. He starts for the Detroit Pistons. He was playing on, I vividly remember that one because there was about 1,000 people packed around his court when he was playing. he was a big deal, big recruit. He was out of Philly, at least played for a Philly team. So he was a big time recruit there. And it's interesting to kind of listen to the names of the players who end up going to play at Duke, or they end up going to play at North Carolina, or they get drafted into the NBA. It's pretty neat to say, hey, you know, they were playing at the Nuck. And so we try to follow that as much as we can. We've even had Ray Allen, former NBA All-Star. And I don't know if he's in the Hall of Fame. He may be someday, but
he will be. Yeah.
He was at the facility. A lot of these guys will sponsor AAU teams.
Okay.
Or they may even coach them. Kevin Durant, Carmelo Anthony, these guys haven't been there, but they'll sponsor teams so that they can participate in the AAU circuit.
Interesting. So, you know, you talk about having all these teams, 500 potential teams, the number of courts that can be, that all requires umpires or referees or whatever they are called in each of the different sports. And, you know, recently I've seen in our local newspaper the fact that there's a high need for the people who watch these games. How have you found to overcome that challenge to get enough people in there to referee games?
When it comes to tournaments, I mean, you're talking about 34 courts going on at the same time. You need 68 officials on the court every game. That's a lot of officials in the building at any time.
How do you overcome that staffing shortage we're hearing about?
Sure. And it's a combination of things, but the main thing is reaching out beyond Lancaster County. I mean, we're pulling officials from Philly, from New York, from Washington, D.C., from Pittsburgh. You know, they're coming in and, you know, finding a way to have enough officials on the courts and trying to have those quality officials. You know, going back to the fact that sometimes these games get heated, a lot of times the officials are in the middle of it. And they want to know from our standpoint, are we taking care of those officials? Are we keeping them safe? Or do we have their back if they have to deal with an issue? And a lot of that, you know, that's been conversations with me, with head officials, assigners, trying to make sure that, you know, we can provide a good, safe environment for them, and that they can, you know, not only make some money, but enjoy what they're doing and not be being screamed at the entire time by coaches, by players, by, you know, parents and spectators. Mm-hmm. They want to know that they're being taken care of. And, you know, some things you have to work through. You know, a lot of these basketball officials, you know, they work multiple jobs. They might work multiple locations. So trying to figure out from our side, from a scheduling standpoint, how do we accommodate our schedule so that we can get enough officials to these games? But you're absolutely right. The shortage, the lack of interest from even, you know, I would say people coming out of high school to have an interest in that profession, you know, has made it a little more challenging for us. You know, so from our standpoint, the best thing that we can do is to make sure that we can show the officials we're supporting them.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that I have a friend who does some refereeing and things like that. And we just had this conversation this past Friday. And he's like, a lot of it is just the fact that we don't want to deal with the parents.
Yeah.
There's, as you talked about, the parents, you know, they're wanting the best. They're very competitive. They're yelling and screaming. And so knowing that the fact that you're taking a proactive stance, like, hey, we're going to stand behind our officials. And, you know, that's very helpful and it's good to know. So hopefully if there's any officials that are listening into this, they'll reach out and say, okay, you got my back. I'm going to come and help out. So.
Yeah, it's easier said than done. You know, we can say that we have their back all day, but we have to show that. And, you know, coming into the door, you know, it's signage letting people know we have a zero tolerance policy when it comes to, you know, being a loud mouth or fighting or causing any type of disruption. We're not going to tolerate it. And, you know, it'll be our security team that, you know, we'll go through and try to enforce that, you know, but it's a challenge.
So we talk about all the training that gets done at Spooky Nook, mm-hmm. but I want to focus on a training that you did a few years ago, because something that you're very proud of, but I also find it interesting that you said you'd also never do it again. But Chuck has also done this. That's why I wanted to bring it up. So you ran a marathon.
Yes.
So, but you also said you'll never run it again.
I will never run a marathon again.
I'll do it again though.
Yeah, I was gonna say you still like them, but yeah, like you're them. Why would you never do it again?
I mean, look, a challenge, right? Go back to that. You know, it was training for months beforehand, you know, trying to get your body ready to handle 26 miles of running. I ran the Baltimore Marathon, and there were a lot of hills in that Baltimore Marathon I was not prepared for. I ended up, you know, the last 2 miles of that race, I said, if there was a bus coming by to pick people up, I'd have jumped on it. It wasn't
all this training, you know, so I'll take the bus.
You didn't hit the wall before mile 24?
Oh, yeah. No, I did.
Okay.
It was probably about 16 miles in, you start going through the streets of Baltimore, and you would run up these hills and you'd be like, all right, I just got to get to the top of this hill. And you'd turn the corner, you'd see the sea of people turning the corner, and you'd look up and it's another hill. And then you turn another corner, it's another hill. And that crushed me.
So were you a runner before you decided to take the challenge of doing a marathon?
Not really. Okay. It wasn't necessarily something I did it for exercise, you know, being a pitcher on a baseball team, running was a good way to recover the muscles, you know, to get the lactic acid out. And so I would run at most 4 or 5 miles at a time. You know, and honestly, taking up the challenge of a marathon was something a couple coworkers said, hey, you know, what do you think about running a marathon? And I'm not sure what was going through my mind at the time, but I was like, all right, I'll give it a shot. And, you know, it was, I didn't put a time on it for myself. I just said, I just want to be able to complete this. Right. Like this is a bucket list thing. Like I would love to be able to say, I ran a marathon. You know what? I can say that and I will never do it again.
Now, would you do a half marathon?
Yeah, I'd probably do a half marathon. You know, I think for me, that last 2 miles sticks in my brain of like, I didn't want to put my foot on the ground again. Okay. I was sitting, my legs were in so much pain running through that and the days of soreness after that. Now I was used to being sore as a pitcher for days after a start, but that was a whole nother level.
It is definitely, and it's a big mental, it's a mental thing. 100%.
Absolutely, yeah.
I know the very first full marathon I did, mile 18 was my wall. And it was 18 and 19. Once I got past that, I was fine. When I hit 24, I found that my pace slowed down.
Okay.
But I was, it's just one of those things. I was always doing 10, 12 miles a day. Yeah. So 70 to 90 miles a week on the road, it wasn't hard off. But you know, now I'm not running near like I was. In fact, I haven't run for a long time, so.
I mean, I'm back to, you know, at most I'll run 3 or 4 miles in a day. And, and that probably happens once a week. So, you know, it's not a.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I thought we could end with a fun little, because Kyle's a huge Philly sports fan.
Okay.
So mostly Sixers, Eagles, and Phillies. I mean, probably like the Flyers, but you're not a big hockey guy.
Sure.
So we're just going to do a short little game, and we're going to try to figure out, we're going to learn Kyle's favorite Philly athlete from this, from the names that I chose. So I'm going to give you two names. Pick it. Pick whoever you want, and then we'll... I'll give you another name to match up with the person that you previously picked. The first one's going to be an easy one because it, well, at least it should be an easy one. So it's going to be Ben Simmons or John Kruk.
John Kruk.
Yeah, I knew that was going to be. So do John Kruk or Donovan McNabb?
John Kruk.
Ooh, okay. I wasn't sure about that one. John Kruk or Tobias Harris?
John Kruk.
Okay. Another one that I was pretty confident in, but still I'm surprised John Kruk has made it this long.
Yeah,
John Kruk or Brian Westbrook or Brian Westbrook.
Ooh. And Brian Westbrook was fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy Kruk as an announcer.
So do you appreciate more of as an announcer or as the player?
We were 10 young. Years old when he was playing in the World Series. So I don't remember him that much as a player. I definitely know him better as an announcer.
Yeah.
I really enjoy listening to him on the broadcast. I just have to stick with John Kruk.
Wow. Okay. Ooh. Okay. So we're going to go John Kruk. I wasn't expecting John Kruk to make it this long. Or let's go with Fletcher Cox.
Oh. Fletcher Cox.
Okay, finally we're off.
We finally got off, John.
Yeah.
Fletcher Cox or Jimmy Rollins?
Jimmy Rollins.
Okay. Jimmy Rollins or Charles Barkley?
Ooh.
Yeah.
I enjoyed Charles Barkley on TNT as well.
Yeah. I always said that if I could have like a beer with like two guys and just casually like this, it might be Charles Barkley and John Kruk.
It might be the
and Shaq. I think I'd throw Shaq in there, but
I think Shaq just because he's such a massive guy. I just think I would just be like,
I think I would just smile and laugh the entire time just because of the, you know, their conversations. Yeah, but
funny things that
Barkley or Cox.
Or Barkley or Jimmy Rollins?
Jimmy Rollins. Yeah.
Rollins and Barkley.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick with Jimmy Rollins. I didn't have a hard time beating Jimmy Rollins.
How about Jimmy Rollins or Tyrese Maxey?
Man, he's so fun to watch. Maxey's so quick.
Yeah.
Jeez. I'm going to say Maxey.
Okay. Yeah, I figured that. Maxey or Chase Utley? Yeah,
this is getting tough.
You're getting it's hard. I'm
trying to get to the, you know.
I'm going to say Maxey.
Maxey over Utley. Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So we're with Maxey still. Maxey or Allen Iverson?
Allen Iverson.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That was pretty confident. Allen Iverson or Brian Dawkins?
Jeez, legendary. Both
yeah.
Those guys. Man, Brian Dawkins was... he was so good at safety position. I'll take Dawkins.
Dawkins, okay. Dawkins or Jason Kelsey?
Might as well have Kyler Taylor Swift. Yeah, I know.
You know, as far as watching an athlete and seeing them perform, I'd stay with Brian Dawkins.
You don't just watch the center position and just focus in on that? All right. So we'll do the last one here because I feel like this is well, actually, no, I'm going to do two more. Right. Brian Dawkins or Joel Embiid?
Joel Embiid is going to be one of the best players to ever play in the NBA.
Yeah.
He is dominant. So I'm going to say Embiid.
All right. And last one, Embiid or Bryce Harper?
He's hitting you hard.
Bryce Harper. Yeah. Hey, you know, that was not that easy as I just made it sound, but because I really do enjoy watching Joel Embiid, but Bryce Harper is just a phenomenal athlete. It's incredible what he can do, and baseball is near and dear to my heart. So I got to go with Harper.
I thought that was how like it was going to end with Harper. That's why I wanted to save him for last, but because I figured if I do him early, like then it's going to be all Harper then at that point. So I wanted to throw him at the end. So
you didn't think Kruk was going to make it that long.
I didn't think Kruk was going to make it that long, but it's kind of like what you said. Like they made it to the World Series in 93, but you know, you were 10. I was like 7 years old at the time. Like you kind of, I remember it kind of, but like,
you didn't see that day to day, like seeing Bryce Harper play every day now.
Yeah.
Like the respect that you have for what he's able to do, how hard he's able to hit a baseball.
Yeah.
How he was able to come back so quickly from such a bad injury.
And he endears himself to Philly fans like no one else.
Wearing the Philly fanatic cleats.
And, he does it better than anybody else.
So I found that interesting, some of the things you're talking about is watching some of these people who you like are really like, wow, they're great players. Mm. In your position at Spooky Nook, you see these young athletes coming through. Are there ones that you really like, wow, they've got the talent, they're going to go? Like, are you able to kind of focus in on any of that? And have you followed any of those players out past their high school years?
A little bit. You know, Jalen Duren was one I talked about with the Detroit Pistons. I usually know about the hype behind a player before they get to the facility.
Okay.
The organizer who's running the event will often tell us, hey, so-and-so is going to be here. And I usually haven't heard of them before because they're high school athletes. He's the number two rated player in the whole country and he's going to Duke next year. So this is a guy you got to pay attention to. And usually those are the ones that I'm out there watching the games. Okay. Honestly, in my role, I don't get to watch a whole lot of the sports that go on. I definitely get to see my kids compete in baseball and basketball more than I get to watch the kids who come into the facility. But I usually like if I catch wind that, you know, this big talent is going to be here, right. You know, I want to say I got to see him play before the rest of you got to see him play.
Hopefully maybe one of your kids you'll be talking about.
There you go. That would be nice.
So we have one last question to kind of finish it off. It's probably the most important question we're going to ask. Okay. What is, you can only pick one. What is your favorite pizza place in Lancaster County? Where are you telling people to go eat their pizza? You can only pick one.
One, I'm going with Roma on Main Street in Ephrata.
All right.
It's my go-to place.
You put them on the chart.
You gotta put them on a list.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever had pizza there.
Oh, yeah. It's phenomenal. That's my place that I go to. My family enjoys it. It's
And it's local because you're from Ephrata. So that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
I mean, there's a lot of places I would list off, but that's number one.
Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us, you know, and opening up and sharing about Spooky Nook. I think it's really cool because there's a lot of things I've learned here at the table that I didn't even know. You know, it's like, wow. I didn't know there was 500 teams playing in the weekend. That's like crazy amount of people. I know that, you know, when I was going there and using the fitness facility and the parking and everything else, it's quite massive. And so you have a pretty intense job, I'm sure, and probably very high stress, but you seem to handle it really well. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Lancaster Happy Hour. Subscribe to our podcast and stay up to date with all things Lancaster and follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube or online at www.chuckhonnebachteam.com. If you have questions about a certain topic or a request for a feature, please submit all inquiries to chuck@honnebachteam.com. Thank you for tuning in, and until next time, cheers!